everyone. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. We're having a lot of fun. Hope you are, too. Before we get into the game this week, I had a question. Now, this book came out quite a while ago, like February, I think. No, March, April. I forget what the date is. It's the latest one that we have obtained. And again, this might give you an idea of when this show was recorded. February 2009, the Dungeons & Dragons Wizards of the Coast came out with Dungeon Delve, which is a book that collects a bunch of little encounters where you could either weave your own D&D campaign or just run the one that's here in the book. I've just been flipping through it on and off the last couple of months, and it seems to be some really kind of cool little adventures or encounters that you can put together that people might want to run in an evening. Brian, D&D Brian, you have this, right?
Yeah, I picked it up some time ago. I never actually used any of the encounters in there for full cloth. I've used them as a basis when making some up, but...
Mm-hmm. You've run something?
He has run stuff.
What's an advantage of...
You weren't in it because you're a jerk.
What's really? The advantage of using a... I hear a lot of people that play the Dungeons & Dragons run through dungeon delves. What is it, and why is it fun or not fun?
Basically, they're just quick, like, kind of pickup games that are pretty much focused mainly on the combat. Just a small story seed, and then...
It also gives you a lot less work for the DM to have to deal with creating encounters, building a map, etc.
Oh, okay.
Free gens are good to have access to if you want to, say you don't have anything and you want to have a game.
Mm-hmm.
But the downside of a pre-gen is that generally speaking, and I don't want to down them because they're great in the right context. Generally speaking, a pre-gen doesn't necessarily have the level of depth that Rodrigo was putting into this game with the overarching stuff. So if you have an epic campaign like this, you might have to do some work and some alterations to the pre-gen to fit that adventure into your overarching campaign.
Yeah, and that's what it does. There is a whole section in this book where it talks about how to expand a delve, how to customize the delve, how to change the monsters out, how to deal with more or less players. Here's a good example of the first one that's in the book, the Copper Knight Hold. The Cavalier, or the Cavalar Copper Knight, a dwarf prospector, led a couple dozen volunteers in a quest for rich veins of ore. Several months ago, they began underground mining operations as well as a surface excavation of a small keep. Hearing of this development, the mayor of the nearest town sent two veteran militia members to investigate. They should have returned 2 days ago. The mayor is growing anxious. So then it kind of goes on with that, and then it's got some ways to expand the delve, and one of the first encounters that your party... encounters is kobolds.
Right.
So then it goes in and it shows you how to set that up. It gives you a map, which we'll talk about maps, I think, in a future episode. But it gives you a little map to draw out, or at least an idea of where to place the monsters or the bad guys in this bit. And then as you go deeper, it gives you the dungeon layout too, which you can use with dungeon tiles. And we may talk about those in a future episode as well. So
in my role as historical advocate / old guy, depending on how you look at it, there is a big downside to pre-gens that I discovered way back in the days of before Advanced Dungeons and Dragons with original D&D. And it's what I like to call burn the gold syndrome. There's one particular pre-gen where one of the creatures were gold bugs. So you'd get a rash of gold, and then these man-eating creatures would be in it. Anybody who played that particular pre-gen knew as soon as you got the gold, burn the gold. So for the longest time, I'd get involved in rounds, and no matter what happened, you get 20 gold, I burn the gold.
Yeah.
To get rid of the gold bugs, just in case they were working off that particular pre-gen, and, 9 out of 10 times it looked like they were.
Yeah, I think these might be, the Wizards of the Coast also sell packaged campaigns.
Yeah.
That really go into depth that include, all the levels and everything that you go in. But, listeners, you might want to check out Dungeon Delve. Of course, Wizards of the Coast isn't paying us for this commentary on Dungeon Delve, although they probably could.
They could, certainly. I'd be willing to take money, Rodrigo.
Yeah.
Money's
so,
good.
I could use what money. Would be nice is if you listeners are going to a Wizards of the Coast convention or a meetup, or if you just want to write them directly and say, hey, how come you guys aren't sponsoring the show or at least sending them product to talk about on the show, we would be greatly appreciative of that.
And by product, we mean Rolls Royces.
No, I mean if they want to send us product like maps, tiles, campaigns, dice, whatever, miniatures. Tacos. Miniature tacos
totally
would be good.
Tacos.
Custom torque.
D&D bread tacos.
Dungeon Delve $29.95 from Wizards of the Coast. It's been out for a while. I'm sure you can find it cheaper via Amazon.com. So let's go ahead and get into this week's game and turn it over to our Dungeon Master, Rodrigo.
Okay. So when we last left our heroes, they were making their way across a lunar landscape with a bunch of now, we'll say, awake and irate monkey lizards in tow. Each one of you is struggling to pull one along. They're not very strong, but they wiggle a lot and they jerk.
They're like chihuahuas.
They kind of are like deadly, deadly chihuahuas.
Yay.
It's like a ferret combined with a Swiss Army knife.
Yep.
I'm just going to tie my length of rope around my waist.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. Then he'll climb up to your waist.
It can't open its mouth anyways, and I'll be paying attention to it.
Well, their legs are pointy, too.
Yeah.
Haven't you been eaten by these things before? I know I have.
No. Normally they kind of get...
Oh, that's right. They're busy eating me.
That, too.
Well, I'm not the one that wandered into a whole pit of them.
There was no wandering involved. That was an intentional, strategic maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what he was doing.
Anyway, we continue to follow Coil.
Okay.
As we hunt for the 123-B.
I have no focal point.
Excellent.
So, I'm self-conscious.
Matthew's camera is now pointed at Rodrigo.
It's actually pointed at his chest more than anything. There we go.
So, as you guys continue to travel, you start going up into this crater. And,
wouldn't it be down into a crater?
No, up, because it mounds.
It's a volcano type thing. Yeah. So we go up the volcano side and then into the crater top mountain.
Right.
Not quite.
This is not the big crater of becoming. This is just another crater. That is not big enough to even warrant putting on the map.
The crater of existing?
Yes. The lesser crater of becoming. And then once you get up there, Coil looks around and says, this is a place where 123B hangs out, eats,
sleeps. Any vegetation or something we could tie a monkey lizard up to?
Nope, it's a big open crater.
Any rocks, giant boulders?
There are big rocks. Just okay. That have come out of the, like, just separated from the crater.
All right. I command my unseen servant to take my monkey lizard out into the open area while the rest of us hide.
Okay.
And wait and prepare to pounce. Do we have any netting?
Yes. Well, what is the best way to capture one of these things?
I usually jump on top of them.
Sounds simplistic.
So, once again, with my knot-tying skills, a lasso.
A lasso?
Yes.
Okay.
A lasso. This is going to be funny.
Not for me, of course. I hand it to Torque.
Actually, you're probably better with it than he is. Or to Coil.
Yeah, well, I hand it to Coil since he's more familiar with these things.
He hands it back. No, I will just jump on mine. Thank you.
Oh, okay. So we each have to capture one?
That would be easiest.
Oh, it won't hold support the five of us?
Certainly not.
Okay.
Very well.
Did Coil get his own pet monkey lizard bait?
Nope.
He's just going to jump. Okay. So it looks like I am going to be jumping. Since mine's out there first.
Okay.
I've got my...
Let's do this.
Lariat in tow.
And as your unseen servant starts dragging the monkey lizard out there, you see this big shadow just swoop over the crater.
Look up.
Okay. Above you is what appears to be a big flat oblong looking thing that also has two actually kind of hand like wings coming off of it. It all seems to be the same membrane, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just hand-like because they end in little finger-like nubs. Bat they don't. Things. Yeah, nah, not quite.
Like a flying squirrel.
Think of it more as like the gloves of a cartoon character. You know, okay. Kind of like big knobby fingers.
Yeah, yeah.
But mostly palm. That's what they look like.
Okay.
But they do not have white gloves on them. They are, their underbellies, which is all you can really see now, are gray, and they have these kind of reflective scratches on them. And of course, as you're looking up, if you'll recall, the moon has a dome over it. And it is similar to that. And one of them begins to swoop down at Orym's monkey lizard, and we'll go ahead and start another skill challenge.
Skill challenge!
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, when challenging your skills, always wear your helmet.
So we're going to need an action point after this.
You're going to get an action point after this. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
You definitely said need.
Which we I all think he's probably have right. an action point get. At this time, do we not?
Yes.
Can an action point be used to reroll in a skills challenge?
Under my rules, it can.
Okay.
Under other rules, yes or no? Or no. Is it always
action points basically don't do anything as far as I remember.
Okay.
I don't know if in the latest errata it does.
Not in errata. There has been a few official skill challenges where they do say if you're trained and whatever, you can reroll with an action point.
Mm. Right. Okay.
Now, are action points an actual part of the fourth gen?
Yes.
They were in 3.5, I recall, vaguely.
At the very end, when Eberron launched, yes.
The last time that I was playing 3.5, we had them, but I was, you know... We had always had the equivalent of kind of an action point as just sort of a homebrew back in the day.
Yeah.
That's probably where it came from. In third edition, I know it, first ones that had it were the D20 modern setting.
Mm-hmm. And they're actually pretty similar to force points, so a lot of the stuff that went into 3.5 was first tested out on the Star Wars RPG as well.
Wow, that sounds familiar. RPG is a
funny word.
Yeah. Everybody, give me an initiative roll.
I don't want to.
Yay! Hey,
initiatizing!
Blast again.
A lamb.
13.
Okay. Or, 13. Smith.
15.
Ooh.
Ha. Ah.
Torque.
19.
Oh.
And Randus.
5.
What?
You rolled a
good
2.
Good lord. Seriously, no, people, when one, I said if Wizards of the Coast wants to send us some stuff, they can send us some uncursed die for
okay.
For D.D. Brian.
No, we need some anti-juju magic for Brian, because he's the one who's cursed.
Okay. So, like the previous challenge, you can, without spending an action point or anything, re-roll either a nature or stealth check with a +4 to it.
Is there any chance that I could see the skills challenge, too?
Oh, sure.
Too bad.
It's very much like the last skills challenge.
It's longer.
So you're saying that Rodrigo's... Oh, never mind.
It's a little bit longer.
I'd be hurt if I were him.
We have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8. 7, 8 versus 3. I think the last one was 6, wasn't it? 5? 5.
Okay. So,
all right.
On 19, Torque, one of these big, flat 123 bees is flying down at one of the monkey lizards. What do you do?
Grab it by the scruff of the neck.
It doesn't have a neck.
How big is it?
Big
enough to carry you.
Yeah, big enough to carry you.
I'm going to leap on its back.
Okay. Using?
Athletics.
Go for it.
Actually, I'd like to leap on its back using stealth, but I don't think that's going to work. How do you feel about 23?
That's a success.
Is there anything to hang on to?
We'll see. Smith.
Going to use insight to figure out where it's going to go while it's diving at the critter.
I think that would be nature.
I know that would be nature, but I don't have nature.
Dang oh.
Well, I have no skills that are useful right
well,
now.
Well, you could fail a nature roll and then eat up your reroll with a +4.
Let's try that.
Okay.
6.
Okay. Rerolling that?
Yep. With nice. A +4, so that'll be 18.
18? That's a success. Yay. So basically, Smith starts running sort of perpendicular to where this thing's coming down, where another one is, because I figure at this point you've all let go of your monkey lizards and the...
tied around my waist.
All right. Well, there you go. Okay, so the monkey lizard starts running. Smith's running behind it, trying to figure out where this thing's going. And as he's running, like, Coyle kind of pops out of nowhere and just nudges him and gets him exactly on an intercept path to grab one of these 123Bs. And that's it for your rerolls.
Oh.
Orym.
Oh, he could... I'm sorry. Did you say that he could... It's an either or with the nature and stealth, or is it
that's
both?
Gone. Oh, okay. You get it once
per person. Oh, okay. Oh, well, that's a big difference there.
I thought it was once per person.
No.
No. I stole all your rerolls.
Yeah, you did. Oh, you stole all of our rerolls?
Mm-hmm. Apparently.
Yeah, that was as a party. You could do that.
Oh.
One reroll per round.
Well, that... Okay, not well, per that round. Changes everything.
Per one encounter. One
well, re-roll. I'm going to just have to use my acrobatics and try to use my... lariat to rope one of these things.
Okay.
And I do it well, 31.
Okay. That's a success.
Steven has been rolling incredibly well today.
Yeah, he has.
Don't mention it.
Yeah, he has.
Fate, this is Rob. He's tempting you. Please ignore him.
Torque. You are on
horseback.
Do you know, like, do you know
did Brian
what
go?
A
Randis oh, doesn't get a turn?
Oh yeah, oh, okay. No, that's Randis.
I was willing to let him pass me, but
no. We don't need Randis
that's
rolling.
A good point. Randis, what do you do? We'll get to Thor.
Okay, how about I just spend all this time just watching everything that's going on,
okay,
in order to determine what best to do or not to do in some cases.
So and perception.
Yes.
Okay, go for it.
That's good. 25.
Nice. See? I don't know what why I crossed you off here.
That's okay. We wrote him off a long time ago, too. So.
All right. So, as I was saying, Torque, you are now on top of one of these things. They, on the top, look kind of like... do you know what, like, a whale shark or, like, a fox shark, one of those guys looks like? Like one of those.
A leopard shark.
Leopard
like.
Shark, yeah. Something like that. it's not the same colors, but it's the same texture and kind of pattern. It's kind of like light with darker splotches, and it feels like sandpaper on top. So at least you're not immediately sliding off. But on the top, they are kind of a bluish gray with white spots.
What's the texture of their flesh?
It's kind of sandpapery on top. You didn't really get to touch the bottom, but on top it's like they have little tiny like sharp scales.
Cool.
So it's your go.
I'm going to use dungeoneering.
Okay.
And utilizing my dungeoneering, I'm going to try and find a way to take a little python from my pack.
Uh-huh.
And try and find a way to put some sort of, just stick it into the creature's spikes to where I have a handhold.
Okay.
Without it killing me.
All right. I would, because these are pretty much above ground creatures, that would have to be a nature check instead of dungeoneering.
What if I was to use my perception?
You can't, because Randa's just used perception.
Yep.
That bastard. Okay.
Nature? Roll it.
Yeah. Yeah! What in the world is up? 23.
Nice.
What?
All right, you go to basically dig into its scales, and you actually see where its mouth is. So you just flip it, like hook a little bit of rope down there, and actually kind of managed to make in some makeshift reins.
Bridle. Awesome.
Yep. Smith.
Okay, so am I on the...
No, you are... Basically, it is like right in front of you, and it's trying to eat the monkey lizard that is also right in front of you.
Okay.
And it's opening its mouth, and this this tongue that is covered in metal plates is uncoiling out of its mouth. Well, if you ate monkey lizards, how would you do it?
I have no idea. Okay.
Probably with
ketchup. Seriously, that image completely derailed my mind. Going to athletics, jump up onto its back.
Okay.
Possibly dragging a monkey lizard with me. Possibly.
See, being tied to the thing that's about to be eaten was some sort of strategic anomaly. I think it was a bad plan.
We'll see.
Hey! 20.
Nice. You guys are dominating. All right, you jump.
We'll see.
And now you also have a rein or bridle of sorts as it's trying to chew on this rope that you're actually tied to, but you're on its back. Facing the opposite direction, but you're on its back.
I'm facing backwards?
Yes.
This is a bad plan.
Orim.
I'm on mine, right? Because I had...
Yes,
captured it.
Well, right. Actually, you're probably being dragged behind it.
I would think that I've already gotten.
I think you're dragged behind it.
Well, fine. I'm still going to use Arcana to use my prestidigitation to see if I can control which way it goes as I climb the rope higher and higher to get on its back.
Nice, nice.
And that would be a 30. No, okay. 29. I'm sorry.
That's a success. Randus.
I'm on top of it. And I'm controlling, and is it controllable? Is the little sparks that I'm shooting out?
You can definitely freak it out in one way or the other.
Excellent.
Okay, so
did it eat my monkey lizard, or is it still...
Your monkey lizard was the first to let go, okay. So I think at this point, the one that Torque jumped onto was the one that you lured.
Okay.
So, right now, your unseen servant is still holding on to it. There's just like a monkey lizard on a leash down there.
Okay. All right. So, it's not been eaten yet. I didn't know if my unseen servant was hanging on to a rope dangling from the mouth of Torque.
Monkey lizard not yet. On a leash.
Okay. It corrected its course after a half or a three-quarter orc jumped on it.
Oh, dee-doo-da-day.
All right. Let's wrap this thing up there, D&D Brian.
We shall see. All right, so I suppose since I spent the last round just watching all this interesting behavior, I suppose it don't look that hard. I shall basically run up and catch the...
You are watching Famous Last Words with Rendus Duthane. Yep.
The last remaining monkey lizard and try to use it to lure a skywell thing and do the best position to jump on it.
Okay.
Is it using nature?
Sounds good.
And I'll re-roll that.
Okay.
I don't...
Was that an action point?
Yes.
Okay.
Not so much better. That'll be a grand total of 12.
12? That's a failure.
Yay!
All right.
Torque's up next.
That's okay. Yeah.
Well, Randus tries to jump onto another one and basically just kind of ends up tackling it. And they run into each other, and now Randus is on the ground, and this thing's on top of him.
I think if anyone's seen a Buster Keaton movie, they get it good.
And top of the round, Torque.
This is unpleasant. So, what does the underside of them feel like?
it's pretty smooth.
That's good.
Wow.
As it tries to mount you.
It feels like, you know, like, actually, it's probably a lot like a gummy shark if you've ever had one. It's kind of like that.
Have you ever gotten parking? It's like that, only with a devil ray.
Torque, what do you do?
All right, so talk to me about the situation here.
Okay. Here's the situation. You are... riding a 123B. You've got its mouth hooked so you can get it to turn, you know, whichever direction you want. Up and down is still a little difficult. Smith is also on top of one. It appears to be chewing on the rope or trying to digest the rope that he is using to control it, and he is facing the opposite direction and try to right himself. Orym is now probably
standing on top of mine.
Probably, like, if you've ever seen one of those equestrian shows.
Yeah.
Like, when people, like, actually get up on top of the saddle, he's basically doing that, and he is just zapping little lightning bolts from one way to another. Yee-haw. And then there's one on the ground that's kind of smothering Randus right now.
Humping Randus.
It is not humping Randus. These Yet. Things do not have external sexual organs.
That we have noticed.
He's not saying it wouldn't happen in his game. It's just not these creatures.
Yeah,
these,
oh, okay. That's not All what right. this one's doing.
All right. So we can maintain our PG rating then.
That's right.
Okay. So what was the last skill used?
What was the last skill used?
Nature.
Nature. So nature's off. And whatever you use last is also done.
Is it relatively clear, whatever I use last?
Yes. You can't use the same skill twice in a row.
Which was nature.
I think. All right. Yeah. So, is it clear that these things could not yep. hold more than one of us at a time?
Yep.
Yeah.
But Randus is being killed.
He's probably not being killed. These things don't actually seem like they'd be able to eat something as big as you guys. And part of the reason why they can't hold more than one of you is that they're not very heavy themselves. So he's probably not even being crushed to death or anything like that.
All right. I would like to try and steer my flying eel monkey devil ray.
Okay.
That's to where I can kick the one off of Randus. Using athletics.
Awesome. Go for it.
That is my plan. All right. So I'm going to swoop down out of the sky, and I'm going to kick it to where it flips over onto its back, whereas Randus, who will be on its back, can now jump on its back while its front is on the back.
Sounds awesome.
26.
All right. That's a success.
Dun, dun, dun.
And that's a successful challenge. So Torque swoops down, kicks the thing off of Randus, which basically flips it over. With Randus on top of it, and it just starts flailing, which actually gets it to gain a little bit of altitude. And as it tries to right itself, Randus just kind of scramble until he's on top of it.
It's just like riding an ornithopter. You never forget once you learn.
Correct.
You have no idea what I just said. Okay.
No, I know what an ornithopter is.
Arfenophilum is a little.
There's zero cuts.
Yes.
Oh, two flyers.
Oh.
And they're made by artificers on every plane.
Yep.
Shh. I'll get to it.
Quiet now. So, you guys all start to gain altitude. I'm sure Randus can work out some way of steering his, probably by having his assistant poke it in different directions. Or something like that. Yep, skitter, skitter, poke. Quick, get to the other side, go. And then, as you begin to gain altitude, there's one that, there were like maybe 12 or 15 of these things. One of them is starting to fly away, and you see this, like, this little spark, and then another one that manifests, on top of it, kind of moving at the same speed that it is. And then there's this loud kind of sound, and all of these robot parts kind of explode out of a single point, whirl around and coalesce into coil, and he just drops down on top of it.
Oh, on top of the, okay.
That was so not fair.
I didn't know he was a teleporter. That is pretty cool.
We didn't ask.
No. He didn't offer either.
Well, we don't know if he's a Methodist either, but, you know, it didn't come up.
And he steers his critter over to you guys.
I take it you've done this a couple of times now.
Yes. once I thought that it was possible, I tried it to complete my research.
So did he save any of the monkey lizards?
I do not think so. They are all gone.
Darn.
I'm sure we can find another nest.
Yes, it is quite easy. Usually a nest will find you.
Amen to that.
So let's follow you, Coil, to the Canyon of Fire.
Very well. So, he leads you, and he,
we pull back to a wide shot as the orchestral music swells.
A broad, kind of a broad, arc around the edge of the Crater of Becoming and points, into it, kind of in the opposite direction that you guys are skirting. That is where the temple is avoided at all costs, and you actually see way, way off in the distance, there's this little just stone building.
Is it ornate, or what's it made out of?
No, it's actually pretty rough, but it's built, and it has these, like, minaret kind of things.
Oh, okay.
But it doesn't, you know, and your guys are pretty far away, but it doesn't seem to be very, like, palatial at all. It's just kind of a utilitarian-looking temple.
All right.
And you guys fly and begin to approach the canyon. And it does get really hot pretty quick. And you guys, kind of without even trying, start to gain altitude.
Okay.
As the 123Bs, now actually pretty docile, now that they're not scared anymore. They're just, you know, you poke them or zap them, they just kind of go where you want them to.
Yeah.
I'm gonna name mine Silver.
Pokey.
He's kind of silver.
Are we nearly there yet?
Not far now, Rainy.
Actually, we are quite far. This canyon is very large. It spans almost the entirety of the moon. Lengthwise.
Okay.
Do we have to fly across it or down it?
We have to fly across it.
Okay.
So, you guys begin to fly over this canyon of fire. And sure enough, you know, you look down and it's basically molten rock on both sides. And actually the center of it is really, really bright. Kind of like a magnesium flare kind of effect. It's really dazzling. It's very difficult to look down, straight down into it.
You know, I know this doesn't mean much no more, but I don't think that's a natural phenomenon there.
Correct. The canyon appeared once the moon was pulled out of its rightful area.
Is that all magic-y in there, or is it just like fire?
No, but I believe that the moon's problematic causality has something to do with the fact that it is so large and hasn't died down yet.
So, is that magic in there, or...?
Yes. Sorry, just yes.
Okay. Because I'd hate to melt, is all I'm saying.
That's why we're up here, on the giant winged flatworm thingies.
Mine is named Silver, by the way.
Mine's Pokey.
So you guys fly, and fly, and fly, and fly, and fly, and fly.
As the music swells on the soundtrack and we cut back to the wide shot.
That's right. Everybody can go ahead and roll me an endurance check.
You need a montage!
Yay.
Hooray.
9.
9?
16.
16.
Not the worst. 11.
Okay. Torque?
31.
Okay. So...
It's in Doran's. Come on.
Randus and Orym start to get pretty tired of sitting there trying to control these things.
Clinging on to dear life.
Yep. Your arm or zapping finger or whatever starts to get pretty tired and kind of hurts, you know, just kind of maintaining this position this whole time. The two of you go ahead and lose a healing surge just from the strain of the thing, especially as you fly past the center of this area that you're crossing. The animals get a little bit more skittish, and it takes a lot more force to kind of keep them on the right path. But eventually, you get to the other side. Coil starts to make a wide circle, or rather spiral down at the other edge, presumably so that he can land.
And presumably we follow.
Well, presumably you do.
Yep.
I presume probably.
Okay. Well, now that we've gotten past this whole hypothetical issue, you all start to spiral down. Once he's, you know, a few feet from the ground, he just jumps off and his 123B flies off.
I follow suit.
Okay. Go ahead and give me an athletics check.
10.
Okay. Ba-thump. You can also give me an athletics check if you're jumping down, or acrobatics.
Well, I fell on my head.
Okay. Also falls on his head. Ba-thump. Torque?
I'm a backflip and land like Iron Man did.
Okay.
That's obviously not a character statement, since
right.
Torque has no idea.
And like,
yeah, that works.
Man. Is there any other way down?
So what'd you get?
I rolled a 19 on acrobatics, which gives me a 22.
And Randus. Actually, there is. You could just steer it all the way down, and you can jump.
Ow.
Okay. Randus also falls on his head. So now there's this pile of adventurers, and then Torque and Coil land on either side of it.
That was funny.
I couldn't even land with a 10.
I like the way you broke off. Your fall with your neck there, Arm. That was...
Yes.
That was dope.
Yes, I send a final zap out of my finger of prestidigitation light right at Torque's nose.
Okay.
To show him I'm not pleased or happy with his comments. Not only is my neck bruised, so is my ego.
Oh.
And one is much larger than the other.
Another bolt flies by Orm's head, or by Torque's head.
Apparently you guys are being attacked, and I didn't... But
I'm
I can whip up an encounter.
You got a pencil neck is all. Or maybe a wand neck, that's funnier.
Coil starts moving farther into this plateau-type thing.
From the other I'm going to help the guys up so we can follow Coil.
Okay. And pretty soon, off in the distance, you can actually see kind of equidistant on two opposite directions. You can see two of the towers.
Hmm.
They are not currently active, that you can tell.
Neither of these two are the central tower, are they, Coil?
No. I am leading you directly to the central tower.
Okay.
So when did these towers appear on the moon?
As towers, not too long ago. There were structures before that these were hidden underneath.
I see.
Since you're quite a bit much longer lived than we are, how long is not too long ago?
Months.
Okay.
Probably the same time they appeared on our plane.
And he continues to travel and continues to travel, and you guys actually start to get pretty tired.
So we have officially reached a milestone, right?
Yes, you have.
So that means we get another action point?
Yes.
We do.
All right.
And I now have an extra arcane empowerment that I could bestow, which I would
choose. An extra empire strikes back.
To put on.
So what is this?
I can only do one item.
Oh, a plus two. So you give me a... So is this a permanent thing?
No, just once.
In that you can keep giving them away as long as you keep reaching milestones, right?
Yes.
Well, it says any item can only be enhanced once per day.
Okay.
All right. So I guess presumably if we do reach a milestone, I'm not supposed to give it back to him on his dagger or whatever.
Right. But it's not like you take it away from him and give it to Orin. You can just...
That's why there's two cards.
Cool. Oh, okay. So what I have here is a plus two bonus to attack roll with my longsword.
A single attack roll. So basically you roll it, and if you want to...
Don't change your character sheet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, you attack with your longsword.
Yep.
You're like, hey, I did a 17 hit his AC. No. How about a 19?
Right.
Okay. Cool.
And that's a one shot?
Yeah, it's a one time
deal. That's cool. Something that I use on a fairly regular basis because Randis gives it to me like every day. Shut up.
So now you're able to give two because you've reached that second milestone?
Yeah, he gives one after an extended rest. And then since you've reached a milestone, you get it.
And that's an artificer talent?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
We haven't had this discussion because usually after an extended rest, one or the others of us end up dead.
Well, that usually just goes to Rob.
Yeah, it usually just goes to Rob, so there hasn't been a big discussion of it.
Because the striker needs to hit.
Yeah. Needs it more than I do.
So you guys travel, and he turns to look at you, and, you know, I mean, you guys being made of meat and all, you've probably slowed down a bit, because you've been traveling for most of the day.
Yeah. He
turns around, walks over. Do you wish to rest, or press on?
I think I need a quick breather.
Okay.
I think we should probably take at least a resty time.
I say we take a 5-minute break and...
Short rest.
Yep.
Very well.
How long's a short rest?
5 minutes?
5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hence the 5-minute break, but thanks for playing.
Well, he was just trying to make sure that we are... Like, they said we're taking 5 minutes. He wants to make sure that he's also getting his short rest benefits out of it.
Ah, my bad.
TikTok. So then in that time, I... Enchant your sword for the one time extra zappiness.
Hey, thanks, man. This is pretty cool.
Thanks.
I guess my sword glows a little bit more, a little brighter.
It's
or is there a little badge
largely
now?
It's largely up to him what he does, but what that generally means, artificers are really good with magic items.
Right.
So presumably as you've been using your sword, it's caught a little bit of grit. It's just become somewhat less efficient. And what an artificer can do is streamline that.
Ah, okay. So now it's all gleamy and shiny.
Yep.
Shring.
Maybe put on some runes on it to enhance its already
a little bad
puissant capabilities.
Cool. Thank you.
And the runes very say cool, ZOMG, LOL.
Yes.
Look, Tor, big sword as I sheath it back.
That's pretty awesome. It'd be cool if he could do that with a weapon that we actually use.
Hey, he does that with a weapon we actually use every day. Pull out my dagger.
Okay.
Put it back.
I'm just making fun of Orym, is all.
I know.
Anyways.
Eat a handful of elven granola.
Okay.
Yeah. Blech.
Are we ready to continue?
Don't crunch it, because that's a rude.
Yes. Okay. I'm ready. I think that's I'm ready.
Good Coyle. To roll.
Coyle turns around and starts rolling. No, not actually rolling. He just starts
rolling,
going.
Rolling, rolling, rolling. Did you just sing rolling. Kid Rock?
No.
No. He was singing Rawhide, actually.
Rawhide I can get behind.
So, you guys continue to travel, and pretty soon, you get to this, you know, all things considered, pretty small array. It's you would say it's probably about 3 stories tall, and has all these smaller kind of tube-looking things. Like think of your classic bullet, only instead of the cap being metal, it's glass.
Okay.
Or yeah, probably glass. And it looks like there should be energy coursing through them, but there isn't. And these are scattered kind of geometrically around this central three-story tall thing. And that itself, is open. It's kind of like a big amphitheater that has all this circuitry emanating from the center of it.
Wow. Is this the central tower?
Yes, this is the central array for the towers.
Are you familiar with how this works, or have you had a chance to examine it before closely?
No, I have not.
We're looking for a big reverse switch.
I do not think...
On one of the towers on our plane, it was a big red button.
No, it wasn't. Wasn't
it? I thought he looked through and saw it.
It was a toggle switch with I on one side and O on the other, I think.
I'm pretty sure there was something that I equated to a big red button was like reactivate sequence, go, destroy universe.
Oh, I thought it was broken, and that's why we were going to the moon.
No.
Okay.
No. All right. Let's take a moment to reiterate the plot. The towers on the natural world can pull.
Okay.
But they can't push.
All right.
You do need tower arrays on the moon to pull or push, either way. It is more than likely that the towers on, due to, you know, if your calculations are correct, that the towers on the moon can push.
Okay.
That is why you're here. Because you could just shut down the towers and leave things the way they are, or you could have come to the moon and tried to fix things.
Right. I could have swore there was a button that we tried to push it and it was broken because the tower was damaged.
No.
All right. That's fair enough. So we're looking for a big button that says reverse or push.
You are unlikely to find anything labeled in a language you comprehend.
We're looking for a big button with squiggles that look like they might say reverse.
Or stop. Then I suggest you start looking for your button.
Do you know of any of where this, how we would reverse the polarity?
I am not
just
an engineer.
Told us that he wasn't very familiar with these things at all.
No, but maybe somewhere in his...
I imagine you two guys have probably had more experience with this. You and Randis here. Let's start looking.
Proceed with caution.
I suppose.
Very well.
Because it always ends up so good whenever we go into a tower.
Caution on high.
Yeah, but we're going to have to go in there to figure out what to do to get it to stop.
Yes, I realize this.
I'm already halfway there.
Really trying to do here.
All right, so as you guys are discussing, Orym is like, go with caution. You guys turn around to argue, and when you look over, Orym's already like 20 feet in front of you.
He's been hanging out with Torque too much.
Orym!
Let's go.
I'm proceeding with caution.
Okay. You're 20 feet ahead of us. It's
quickly
not really
proceeding with caution.
All right. So you guys enter this enormous amphitheater type thing.
Yippee.
There's a lot of stuff here, a lot of stuff for you guys to look at. You can all give me... Well, first off, what are you looking for?
A button with...
If you once again say a button that says reverse... You know what? Right in the center of this thing, there is a button that says, to reverse everything that's happened, press this.
Really?
Yes.
That's quite easy.
Yes, it is. It does not look like a trick at all.
What do you say, Admiral Akbar?
Yep. All right. So what are you guys looking for?
I'm looking for a power source.
Instruction manual.
Instruction manual.
All right.
Good call.
Power source is good.
Yes.
Smith's looking for an instruction manual.
Main control panel.
Okay.
And Torque has no interest.
I'm going to look for anything glowy.
There's all kinds of glowy.
If it's glowy, it could be doing something. So.
Hey, Torque.
What?
How about you and I look out for bad stuff that will attack Orym and
Randis? That's why I'm looking for glowy things.
Not all the bad stuff here is glowed. Monkey lizards are bad things. Do they glow?
Yep.
Is you glowing?
Smith does not appear to be glowing.
Yeah, we'll see.
Not at this time.
Once we turn this on.
But if he does.
Okay, Orim, go ahead and give me an Arcana check.
For 23.
Okay.
His Arcana check actually opened the Vault of Horror.
And Smith, you're looking for critters?
I thought he was looking for an instruction manual.
Yeah, but then he said that him and Torg were going
keep an eye out.
I was making a joke at looking for an instruction manual. I'm actually looking for stuff that will hurt us.
Okay.
I don't know what
it is. So both Smith and Tor can give me a perception check.
Such great lookouts.
4. Okay. And Tor?
No, I don't see any.
23? Okay. Well, that about averages out. Even.
I'm afraid to go into combat. I've been rolling really well on my perception and nature checks.
Yep.
Usually and I suck at those, and then my combat rolls are awesome.
Randa's, go ahead and give me an Arcana check as well.
Awesome. Yeah. 14?
14.
14.
That's less awesome.
Okay. Orim, you find... You basically find a... what looks like a big ring on the ground with cables coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this glass, case.
Okay.
That is completely charred.
Okay.
On the inside.
Does it look like the one that was in that one tower where it had the black critters coming out of it?
No, this is not anything that you've seen before.
Okay.
Smith is distracted by Tork. Luckily, Tork does not spot any hostile critters right now. And Randus does not seem to be able to make sense of what he is looking at.
Did Coil find anything?
Coil is also standing guard.
Oh, okay. Hey, Randus, Coil, come look at this.
Okay.
This looks maybe this is a power supply of some kind. It looks to be burnt out or somehow the trying to pull the moon down onto the plane caused it to burn out.
Well, we'll probably have to see if we can't get that replaced in some way. Let's look at it.
Okay. Carefully. You both can give me a new Arcana check.
Better!
And 18.
Can't get much better than
18
that.
18 and
31.
Okay. Well, you're pretty sure that all of this array's power is centered through here.
Okay.
Orim. And Randus, this is pretty obviously, once you start going around, a fuse, and B, a broken fuse.
Very well.
Aha.
Are there any... This is a big amphitheater, so there's probably not any doors or anything where
everything's spare pretty
fuse
open
might
here.
Be stored.
Yeah. You don't see... You can give me a perception check to see if you
Nobody
spot
Nobody has
any.
A giant penny?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I got a dime. So if we ever want to record on 3/4, we're set.
I'm sure I could grow one.
All right. So I suppose rummaging in my pack of random stuff, could I find anything that could approximate a fuse in order to...
You're pretty sure that this fuse is made in a very specific way. You don't recognize the metal that it's made of. And the arcane construction of it is very specific. You're pretty sure that in order for this fuse to work at all, it has to be optimal, and it has to be specifically something that is designed to channel whatever energy the towers are moving around.
No. You are not using me as the fuse.
Very well.
You'd be a good fuse, though.
It's just a thought. Yeah. Anyways.
Don't we have, any of your magic-y spells that can fix something what's broken? Like a repair spell or a do something spell? Because that's the first thing I'm going to make if I get magic, because I'm going to write a spell. I'm going to call it do something. And I'll use it when I need to do something.
I'm so glad they have people remind me of the crap I did. Yes, then we shall go ahead and go with the make whole ritual to make this once again whole.
We really do have something magic that does that?
Yes.
Awesome! Not only am I the strategerier, I'm the smart one too. I like today. Usually I'm just like, hold the door, Torque. Kill the bad guy, Torque. Save us all from impending doom, Torque. It's good to be in the brain pool for once.
I'm obviously distracted by my nerve-wracking ride and being in another tower that brings back so much fond memories.
Okay, let's see.
Maybe we're all rubbing off on each other.
Problem is, this make whole spell probably requires two components. Real hands.
No.
I done asked if I could do it on myself.
You're mocking the man. Oh.
So, no, I'm just saying that's probably
as you're looking at this. Here's what make whole says. Right. Level 1 component cost special, category exploration, market price 50 gold, blah blah blah, takes 10 minutes, key skills arcana, no check necessary, duration permanent. A single object that can fit in a 10-foot cube is completely repaired. The component cost is 20% of the item's cost. In cases where you attempt to repair an item not on any price list, the DM determines the cost.
Oh, no.
So,
first off,
using my...
this thing doesn't fit in a 10-foot cube.
Oh,
which is the first issue. It's like it's a chamber that the 5 of you could actually step into.
Oh, it's the entire chamber is...
No, this fuse, this big glass fuse, is that big. Like, big enough that the ring that it fits into, the 5 of you could stand in.
Could we possibly dismantle it to break it down to its component parts it? And then
make each of them whole and then what?
And then reassemble it together.
It's a big glass thing.
Can we shrink it and then whole and then make it big again?
Do it. Take it apart. See what you find.
Very well. I'll do that because it didn't look like I got a bunch of other options.
Okay. So, what? You get everybody to get on one side and start unscrewing it or what?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Just unscrew it, take it apart, and, you know, it's without breaking.
Who's going to take point on this?
I have an idea here.
You hold on to it.
No.
What's the idea?
Could we see, is it going to be necessary for all of the towers on the moon to be able to push the moon away? Or is the central array the one that we really need to just activate sort of push it away? I.e., could we go take this same similar piece from another one of the towers and replace it here?
How are we going to lift it if it's that big?
Furthermore, travel between towers would take weeks. And that is unencumbered.
Yeah,
I understand.
How bad it would be if we were carrying stuff.
Yeah.
Well.
So you say we can walk into it?
No, you can't walk into it.
Oh, okay.
But you presumably would fit into it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All right, let's pull this
thing out. Is it hollow?
It's completely charred, but presumably it is. The ones that are outside, like the littler ones, are hollow.
Huh. What happens when I scrape on it?
Nothing. It's like scratching glass.
Okay.
It appears to be charred on the inside.
A charred on the inside as well.
When I would go fishing, sometimes you have to fish and you can't get a line that's thick enough to get the big fish, but you can use it for a minute until it breaks long enough to get the fish to where you can club it over the head. Could we use one of the littler ones long enough just to have to blow it up and burn it out and break the line long enough to where it might work, or?
Yeah, I was going to suggest something. Can we combine the smaller crystals into a big crystal?
All right, first off, are you actually removing this thing? Like, are you saying this while you're removing this thing or not?
At least we're working on removing it.
Okay, so who's taking point on this? On the actual physical removal of it. All right,
go ahead and give me an athletics job. Check.
Yay.
And I suppose Torque would be strong, too, in helping on this 20. Dismantling.
Okay. Well, you guys start turning it and clicking it off, and it takes a good deal of lifting, but you actually get it off.
Okay.
And now are kind of doing that thing where you're carrying really heavy furniture where it's just like...
No. Left. My left. No.
Pivot.
And then you guys manage to set it down, possibly against the wall so it doesn't roll away.
All right.
And there in the center of it are some...
Monkey lizards.
No, goblins.
Yay.
There's just a kind of concave, kind of like bowl type area. And the connector seems to be like, it doesn't have actual like prongs or anything. It just seems to make contact physically with this kind of a reflective bowl.
So the contacts were on the bottom of the...
Of this fuse, yeah.
Of the fuse, okay. And there's something... Is what's on the bottom of the bowl, anything?
It's like a mirrored... No, it's just... There's nothing on the bottom of the bowl. Oh, okay.
Well, that we know of. So hey, Smith, can you crawl down inside that bowl and see if there's any connector down in there at all?
Why Smith?
Because you've got better perception and you were able to get that giant fuse off better than any of us.
What's your bluff check?
2.
Okay. What's your passive sense motive?
My passive insight is insight. 17.
Okay.
So yeah, no.
You know what this
is
getting
freaking
to.
Blind.
Right. But if your character was dumb, you might believe it. Yeah. That's what I'm getting at.
No, I'm a face. I have diplomacy and insight.
There you go.
Which is why I'm usually useless in the skill challenges.
Worth
up
a
here.
Try. Does it look like we can take these smaller crystals and turn them into a giant one or not?
You
or
do go those... out and start unscrewing one?
But does it mean, when we look at these, are these just things that are scattered around?
Well, first,
or are they part of the machinery?
They're part of the machinery. Okay. There's little arrays that have their own little fuse.
Right.
Assuming that this is just a gigantic version of those, you won't even be able to stand those up in the center of this. Like, if you set it down,
right, it
they'll
fall
just
over.
Fall over and kind of do a little, like, rolling down the penny thing.
Nice.
But there's no hole at the bottom of this bowl, right?
Nope. Okay. It's just a solid bowl.
How big is the bowl?
It's probably...
Bigger than 10 feet across.
Yeah. It's probably, we'll say, 1, 2, 3, 4...
20?
Yeah. It's like a... Yeah, 4 by 4 square, which is a 20 by 20 square.
So... Is there any particular component that seems to be the most broken?
The fuse is completely charred.
Okay, so we're probably not going to be able to pull the make hole off.
No.
Unless we actually get out our entrenching tools and literally make a hole. Do we see any other ones of this magnitude around?
No. They're all smaller than this one.
Yeah. I tried to pull the... is there a storage closet somewhere that might have another one of these?
Well, there might be. We should go look for one.
Some way I can analyze this to try to determine what exact substance it's actually made out of?
Yeah.
Quadratite.
Unobtainium.
Yep.
Unobtainium.
24.
It's a vibranium adamantium alloy.
Yeah, I mean, what would you want to call it? You've never seen this metal before.
That's true.
But you can figure out its properties.
It is moonanite.
There you go.
Perfect.
Indeed, it is moonanite.
You could use it to power a quad laser.
Yes. Yes, you could.
I apologize.
All right. On that note, why don't we end the session there?
Yes.
By heading over to our email area and checking to see what people have written us over the last couple of weeks. This one's interesting because it comes from Raymond, and the subject has been in parentheses tagged as unclassified. It says, greetings, your podcasts are great. I'm currently in Afghanistan, and I stumbled across your podcast on iTunes. It takes about 4 hours for me to download 50 megs, so it takes a while. but it's always well worth it. I'm at number 18 and should be able to catch up in a few weeks. When I do catch up, I'm sure I'll be able to adjust to getting only one pod that has been cast each week. Thank you for the great show. Raymond, who is stationed, this is from a military email account, is stationed in Afghanistan. So thank you so much, Raymond, for writing in, and glad we can bring you some joy while you are over there, and hopefully you are being very, very safe.
The plus side is that he's behind enough, and we are reading this ahead enough that he might be back by the time he hears this.
There you go. Yes.
Which would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That is kind of cool, though. You know, we're just a bunch of gorks in our living rooms, or in your case, in the secret hidden lair deep within the bowels of a sperm whale. But things like that kind of remind you that, hey, 86% IR isn't that bad after all.
IR.
Don't. Okay. You would have to listen to the Major Spoilers podcast to get that.
Listen to the Major Spoilers podcast?
Let's not get into this.
As an ineffectual middle management sucker, I have to know a lot of different acronyms that don't really mean anything other than did the customer love you? And then we move on. And now we're cha-ching.
Okay, here's another question from Justin. Maybe. Justin writes in and he says that he likes everything. He's been listening to 50 plus hours of the show already. And I found a few pages that caught my interest. I've never played Dungeons & Dragons, although I have played a tabletop RPG based on WoW before. Oh, we can't even mention this anymore. He says, wow, nobody likes that. The main reason I write is to give you this information and ask you your thoughts on this technology. Apparently, he's talking about Google Wave and other sharing technologies that are out there to run a game. Is this viable? Perhaps if you think it is viable, you could get a group going between your fans. Just excited about today's tech. Thought you all might be as well. Now, we've talked about, there are a couple of links that he put here to remote games, but we've, on the Major Spoilers forum, there's a play by post, category where a couple of games have started. And then we've talked before about some other technologies that have been used before as well.
When you decide that you want to run a game remotely, that is to say with one or more of the players in a different place as the game master, you have to make a series of decisions and then kind of look up the technology. And the decisions basically come from how much like a regular session where people are there do you want to make it?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is meh, then you can do play by post, which allows you to, you know, kind of in a very slow version, or if you go to the Major Spoilers forums in a not so slow version, dictate what your character does and have the game master respond to you. Sometimes, you know, sometimes that takes a really long time. Sometimes people's like, sometimes those games take so long that people's lives change in the middle of them and they have to go.
Right.
He's done. That's me.
Quick, the Heimlich maneuver.
All right, I think you got him. All right, so now that he's done coughing, you should cut out this whole.
Actually, that was me. I think. Anyway, go ahead.
Mic check.
No. You know, a little bit. A little bit closer than that. You know, do you want to do stuff over chat room? You're still typing. You're not looking at each other. But then that happens pretty much in real time, you know, and you can do that with any chat program. I'm pretty sure Instant Messenger and Trillion. That's what. Actually have dice rolling applications written into
Trillion. I know AIM is the one that we used to play for all of our.
I think IRC has a random roll too.
Right. So you can even roll dice in your chat room so that everybody can see them. There's no question of whether somebody's doing it or not. There's Skype. Skype, when you get a bunch of people, you can't see them.
Actually, the latest version of Skype on Windows has the ability to do it's either a three-way or a five-way video conference call. So you can.
Well, if it's a five-way, then you're kind of set because, you know.
If you got this.
If you have four players and a game master, like or we do.
A couple of people in the same room would work as well.
We have four players?
This link that was sent to us uses a service called TalkBox, TalkBox.com, an online service very similar to Skype. Once you do that, you set up a video call, then you use Google Wave, and Google Wave is a online sharing, a collaborative sharing document.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is an add-on to this called Fighty Plus, which allows you to do some of your fighting and texting back and forth, and then you can just play the game that way. That's one way to do it. And I know that there are some other, like for Matthew, if Rodrigo actually had a game grid built up electronically, there's a software application that'll allow you to share that with people remotely. Yeah. So we could all again be on a chat somewhere, and we could all see the gaming table and where everyone's moving, and we could see that. To me, it seems a little complicated to set up, but that might be an option as well.
Yeah, and it's getting there. This technology is kind of behind the times right now.
Right.
Because it's mostly, you know, people doing it for free. Nobody's really developing. You know, Wizards has been developing theirs, but that's been a long, long time. I mean, it was kind of meant to be launched as a full suite with the character builder and all this stuff. But that particular piece where you can play the game remotely on your computer is still a little behind.
Yeah, I would say from the perspective of the now 1 year experienced remote player, there are a couple of things that I would recommend if you're going to get involved in a remote game. The first thing you want to make sure that you are is either really familiar with the system, or like I do, have a fallback in having, you know, Rob do my mathing and Rodrigo remind me when I screw it up. You really want to know what you're doing. And it is difficult for me to follow the game. From a DM perspective, I imagine it's probably going to be really frustrating if you have five people in different places.
Yeah.
You know, and if Steven's at his house and Mason's having a fit and I'm at my house and I've got porn in another window and Rob's playing Plants vs. Zombies at the same time that he's playing his game at his house, you know, those external distractions could probably really start to mount up. But the primary thing that you really want to do is have an idea of what you want to do with a game, because if it weren't for the fact that this is something that we are doing for a specific purpose and we're doing this because, well, it's fun. Rodrigo's a good game master, but there's also a statement of let's have some fun. Let's play D&D. Let's learn and teach about D&D. I don't know that I would have devoted a year to doing this the way that I'm doing it as my prime choice. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, that applies to any game, close or far, or, you know, even if you get your friends together every weekend, you have to decide what kind of game you're running and how much time you're going to devote to it.
Right.
That question comes up a lot, or is a lot more evident when everybody has to spend more energy into it, like in a remote game, you know, in this case, literally spending, you know, electricity on it. That's definitely something that most games and game masters kind of address in an unspoken way, but it's something that it doesn't kill you to say, hey guys, what's your expectations out of this game? This is what I want, you guys. This is the attention level that I want. And then snap your fingers in front of them. Don't do that. It annoys people and it scares Rob.
Yeah. Or, you know, reminding people that's their allotted number of references for a given show, he said, hinting broadly.
Yep.
All right. Before we get out of here, we want to give a few shout-outs to some 5-star ratings over at iTunes. We want to give a big thanks out to Robbie Warnock, Balsac40. I hope that's not Balsac40, but...
it's Balzac.
Balzac40.
Like
and
the philosopher.
CPL12, thank you all so much for your 5-star reviews. And if you'd like to get a shout out on the show, just head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating for Critical Kit, and leave a message. Just don't vote. You actually have to leave a comment. That's a 5-star rating, and it's greatly appreciated. And we'll give some more of those out in future shows. And if you have any questions, all you have to do is send us an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com, and we will get those read in the future as well. And we may even have a few surprises just around the corner. You're going to have to keep listening to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons and Dragons podcast. So until next time, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.